Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the August 9th, 2014 meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. My fellow commissioners have urged me to be very efficient this morning. So there's a number of people have to catch planes and drive long distances, so we're going to jump right into it. Good to see many familiar faces again. Looking forward to all of your testimony. And that's what we start with, open public input, item number 11. I'll call you up two at a time, remind you that the commission rules provide you 3 minutes to testify. When you hear the beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to finish your sentence. Maybe take one more sentence, but conclude your remarks, please. Dave Duncan and Jack Fields, please come forward. Good morning, Mr. Duncan.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, Wildlife Commissioners, Director Anderson. My name is Dave Duncan. My address is 4636 Weaver Road, Ellensburg, Washington. I'm chairman of the WCA Wildlife Sportsman Rancher ESA Committee, longtime member of the GMAC, and hauling it on the WAG. As many of you know, WCA was dragged into wolf recovery screaming and yelling. But our message was heard by you, the commission, and the director, and finally included wolf management, and we thank you. In April 2012, you published the commission statement, Wolves in Washington, and again, we thank you. As it put our minds at ease at the long-term management goals of the commission, WCA became proactive on wolf recovery and signed up many producers on preventive contracts, knowing there would be management and control of problem wolves population after delisting. Several months ago, we had a setback in the WAG when 4 of the 9 representative organizations declared they were anti-hunting and anti-management of wolf populations. We then received the 2015-21 game management plan, which includes a new predator-prey section on bears and cougars, and it will, by definition, include wolves after delisting. We believe the approach outlined and the implementation of the predator management is not attainable and is designed to leave impacted stakeholders without an acceptable remedy. It is single-species management to the detriment of prey species and North American wildlife conservation model, hunters, cattlemen, and rural residents, and it's not acceptable to us. The guiding principles in the new section creates many impossible hoops for the department to pass through, and it'll be possible for them to justify control of predator populations without being sued by the anti-hunting community for lack of due diligence. It will completely tie the hands of the department to manage predator populations in the future. This new section is quite similar to how cougars are being managed at present, and the outcome is to protect this very resilient and adaptable species at a maximum level on the landscape, which includes my backyard, with a 50% recruitment level, regardless of the reality on the ground. As a result, current cougar management is outside the legislative mandates, in my opinion and in a barrister's opinion. The existing cougar management population objective was developed without any baseline information on prey population size, and there's no mechanism to even identify if a particular prey population or recruitment level is below the management objective. Currently, cougar caused livestock mortality complaints and landowner tolerance is at an all-time high. Okay. I thank you very much for listening. I'll leave several paragraphs out and consider.
Well, you can provide the written version to Tammy, and she'll.
I don't have 12 copies, but I thank you very much for listening.
She will make copies for you.
Considering my comments, and I fully realize how tough some of these wildlife management decisions are. But public opinion should not be the driver in the decision-making process. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'll call the next person up. Bill Sylvester, to come forward. Mr. Field, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Director Anderson, Deputy Storr. For the record, Jack Field with the Washington Cattlemen's Association. Here, first and foremost, I would like to thank the Commission for your action and direction on the petitioner's request and the department's position in denying that. That was a very difficult decision and one that, as a member of the Wolf Advisory Group, I sincerely appreciate that. That's the kind of leadership and direction that we need. This is a very complex and challenging issue for all parties, but one that as we go forward from the WAG, I would make a request that the Commission give the WAG very clear direction, what your expectations are, so we can provide you the quality of input that will help you as you make some of these difficult decisions. I firmly believe that the consensus approach that we've been taking will not give you the quality and information you need in terms of real true feedback to make the kind of decisions you'll need to as we tackle wolf management now into the future. I'd like to focus primarily on the game management plan and the compressed timelines. As a stakeholder, I'm extremely frustrated with the amount of time we had to actually comment on what was deemed the final version. I'd have to look back. I believe we had about approximately a week's time to go through a 166-page document. For a document of 166 pages, it will be the guiding light in game management. That's absolutely unacceptable. This is going to be a six-year document that people on all spectrums, whether you are out there non-consumptively utilizing wildlife and enjoying it or a consumptive user, we can't have a document with this magnitude of importance for all stakeholders only have that amount of time. I appreciate the department's response. Have not had a chance to look at this. Extensive comments at six-point font. Folks have been burning the midnight oil, but again, we as stakeholders can't provide you the kind of quality input you need because we don't know how our comments were interpreted yet. It would have been great to have this 2 weeks ago where everybody could have had time, regardless of your position on the issues, to be able to say, I had a comment, say, on predator-prey or a compensation mechanism to see the department's response so we could better provide you with input. Again, it doesn't do any of us any good to say we love it or we hate it. You need to know why and what the constituents and the people out in the country really feel about the decisions, how they impact us. So if, as we go forward, we would certainly like to see additional time on those as we move forward. It's very concerning to see a document of this magnitude with the potential SEPA implications and the policy not have the true time that it takes to do that. This game management plan is going to have strong undertones as we look to the legislative package and future requests. It will have implications over funding requests that come, and as a stakeholder, we'd love to be able to support the department as much as we possibly can, but we just need to have time to be able to participate.
Thank you. Okay, Harold Hobster. Okay, Mr. Sylvester, you can go ahead.
Madam Chairman and Commission, my name is Bill Sylvester, and I live west of Buckley in Elk Area 6013, which was established on the north edge of GMU 652. At the March 2010 Commission meeting, the Muckleshoot Tribe was given Elk Area 6013 and a herd of 100 elk. No public input was presented at this meeting. I have public disclosure requests confirming no landowners impacted by creating this area were notified of this meeting. No elk survey was conducted, but one would have clearly shown that the population objective of 100 head were already in this area. In the fall of 2010, the Commission closed regular season antlerless hunting in Elk Area 6013. Elk numbers have now escalated to over 300 head, or 300% the number of elk the tribe requested in 2010. 31st District Senator Pam Roach organized a meeting held last April 8th in Enumclaw. WDFW and about 50 very concerned landowners attended this meeting and confirmed severe elk damage is occurring in the Buckley-Enumclaw area. Page 124 of the 2013 Game Population and Trend Report states the Buckley-Enumclaw area is the only chronic elk damage area in GMU 652. In spite of these facts, this commission allowed no changes whatsoever in the new 2014 game regulations to help solve this elk damage problem. Last season, these same regulations resulted in only 5 antlerless elk being harvested in Area 6013. I have been told there is a proposal to adjust the boundary of Area 6013 to exclude the eastern agricultural portion where the vast majority of elk damage is occurring. I'm here today to urge the Commission to actively support and approve this boundary revision and return regulation of this area to WDFW, who successfully controlled elk numbers from 2002 through 2009. This fall, WDFW should be allowed to implement muzzleloader and modern firearm antlerless hunts, as well as issue significant numbers of damaged master hunter and landowner permits. It would be deplorable for this commission to allow elk totals to exceed 400 head by waiting until 2015 to change regulations in their proposed excluded area of 6013. In conclusion, elk damage places a severe burden on landowners. It costs over $400 a year to pasture just one dairy or beef animal the size of the average elk. There was no justification whatsoever to needlessly create a herd of over 300 elk and subject 6013 landowners to this huge amount of crop and pasture damage.
Thank you. Jack Hollingsworth.
Okay. Madam Chairperson, Commission members, and Director Anderson. My name is Harold Holtby. I live in Pierce County between Eatonville and Graham. I wanted to talk about muzzleloading restrictions. I'll speak about game damage in the next half hour. In 1984, the department divided the user groups. Why does the department just penalize the muzzleloader hunting user group? You do not allow scopes on rifles, no 209 primers. You require them to have a rifle with a primer that's exposed to the weather. You allow modern rifles and pistol hunters to have scopes. You allow the archers to have new modern compound bows and carbon arrows. Requiring the muzzleloading rifle with the primer exposed to the weather only causes hang fires and misfires because the powder is damp due to that weather in rainy Washington, and wounding a lot of animals to die a lingering death. This is not humane. I teach hunter education and instruct hunters to use and make a one clean shot humane kill. By restricting the muzzleloaders to use other equipment, it doesn't give them an opportunity to provide modern humane hunting. If the hunter wants to use a primitive long bow and arrow or grandfather's muzzleloader flintlock, which is exposed to the weather, during your regular seasons, they have opportunity to do that. I wanted to speak a little about acquiring additional hunters for this state. A lot of today's society, the modern people are getting divorced. The grandparents raise the kids, they live with them, and if you reduce the hunting license fees for the older people, they will take the young kids hunting. Despite what a lot of people think, older retired people don't have more money than they know what to do with. In Montana, a person 62 years of age can hunt for $60. He can hunt fish, game birds, waterfowl, deer, and elk for half price for a total of $60. In the state of Washington, it costs you $203 to do the same thing. The youth hunters is a lot cheaper in Montana, and it is here. If you restrict these people to have to pay these high fees, they're not going to continue to hunt. Give the opportunity for these younger and older people to hunt. Thank you.
Robert Sendry. Mr. Hollingswood.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commission members. I want to talk about the Willow Paw and Clays Harbor management plan. I feel the department has violated the APA process in setting the commercial season in Willow Paw Bay. During the entire North of Falcon process, the CR-103 that established the current gillnet season in Willow Paw Bay, this option was never discussed. At all the meetings, and in the final meeting that we had here in Olympia, we had, I think there was 6 or 8 options that the public had a chance to discuss. The option that they adopted was not one of them. Not zero public input was listened to for this proposal. We lost approximately 17 days of coho fishing and 2 or 3 days of Chinook fishing under this proposal compared to last year. And the options that was presented to us during the North of Falcon process was similar to last year's season. I feel this will cost the fishermen of Willapaw approximately $400,000 worth of salmon, mostly coho, surplus coho. Now for Grays Harbor. The new management plan that was adopted prohibits a direct fishery on any stock that hasn't met escapement in the last 3 out of 5 years. Currently, this is a situation for the Chehalis Chinook. WDFW has set an opener in the Chehalis system for Chinook jacks. Nowhere in the plan is the size of a fish, any stock of fish, mentioned. I feel this is a direct violation of the management plan. This will result in catching and releasing adults in the Chehalis system because they're mixed in with the jacks, and there'll be additional mortalities. The sports in the marine area are not allowed to have a directed Chinook fishery. There are some marked hatchery fish available in that area. The department denied them the request to have to keep those fish because they said it would, if they established a select fishery there, it would encourage extra participation and extra handling of the wild salmon. So this is exactly what the jack fishery will do in the Chehalis. And for the commercial season in Grays Harbor, the commercial representatives testified that if the Chinook were not met, or if the season was not met for established for Chinook, that the tribe would harvest those fish. It's exactly what they're going to do. I feel that there's going to be probably 20,000 surplus coho, and that's what the non-treaty fishers can target. And I believe that'll cost us around $200,000 of lost revenue in Grays Harbor.
Thank you. Thank you. Norman Lang. Hey, Mr. Sendry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners, Director Anderson, Deputy Director Storr. My name is Robert Sendry from Everett, Washington. I'm the Executive Director of Sound Salmon Solutions, one of 14 regional fishery enhancement groups. Our nonprofit organization has been serving the Stillaguamish, Snohomish, and Island County watersheds for the last 24 years. Over the last 2 years, I've served on a committee of peers from the RFEG Coalition tasked with identifying sustainable funding sources to augment funding that has not been adjusted for inflation since the RFEG's program's inception in 1990. The dollar per food fish license that we receive is quickly becoming inadequate to maintain organizational capacity. The grant-funded capital projects that the RFEGs develop and construct are at best zero-sum transactions financially. In addition to generating match, we often have to subsidize the projects because of our indirect expenses not being reimbursed. Those subsidies end up coming from the license and ECR revenues collected by the department. Reductions in federal support due to sequestration combined with proposed reductions in hatchery production will further exacerbate the erosion of the RFEG program's base operational funding. Currently, my organization employs only 2 year-round full-time staff. The rest, including myself, are part-time. If sustainable long-term funding for our program is not secured, then my organization and some of our RFEG peers will likely be out of business a year or two from now. Just when salmon recovery will need the benefits of community-based, volunteer-supported organizations like ours the most, we will be in the greatest financial jeopardy. Therefore, I respectfully ask that you support the funding request that the Coalition of RFEGs have collaboratively partnered with the department to develop so as to ensure the long-term viability of the RFEG program. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Bob McCoy. Mr. Lang.
Commissioners, Director Anderson. My name is Norm Lang. I'm from Mill Creek, Washington. I am one of those volunteers that Robert just spoke about. I got into working with Sound Salmon Solutions to go out and help with the habitat restoration. I sit on the board. I'm the vice president of the board. Robert is now a part-time employee. He puts a lot of time in. Our volunteers put a lot of time in. We need funding to help us work because our overhead's not covered. So we go out and we try to get people to donate and contribute in. But, you know, salmon are salmon, and when you go out and look, when there's people programs of people with cancer, heart, all that, it's tough to compete to get the monies. So I grew up in the little town of Tolt, Carnation, on the Snoqualmie River, Tolt River. I remember in the 50s seeing salmon run up those rivers so much that you'd be snagging fish that you didn't want to snag, big dog salmon and Chinooks. You go down there now, and I was just down there for a class reunion my 50th year in high school at Tolt. There are no salmon coming up those rivers. If there are, you sure don't see them. So I'm appealing, as Robert did, if there's any extra funding out there, or funding that we can increase to help the RFEG programs, it'll be appreciated. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Melinda Hirsch. Okay, Mr. McCoy.
Good morning. I'm Bob McCoy, Sammamish, Washington. I had prepared a, I hope, short, concise little handout for you. In this open input, I'll be talking to items 3, 4, and 5. And one of the graphs on the backside. The first item that concerns me is coyote hunting contests. I believe those violate one of the sisters of the North American wildlife conservation model, which is that wildlife should not be killed for frivolous purposes. I think the science is pretty sound that killing coyotes does not really decrease their population nor decrease problems between humans and coyotes. So I'd like that either to come under some type of rule and control, but killing contests just aren't really what people in Washington like for the most part. I believe the commission should rule against the use of lead in fishing and in hunting, and or work with the legislature to get lead out. California is pretty much leading the nation. There are alternative ammunition types being made. Lead is very long-lived in the environment and never loses its toxicity. The fifth item, which I believe some of, I'm not sure this particular item is addressed in this afternoon, but has to do with funding. And I believe the department really needs the work to bring the larger community and constituencies into its funding model. And if we would look at page 2 of the handout, if they gave
we
that.
Will be receiving it after the meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a chart, and numbers will glaze your eyes when spoken. But Wildlife Watchers, the last national survey showed in Washington's 2.2 million people versus 218,000 hunters. And the total economic impact, including ripple effect, is $5.5 billion from wildlife watching. And certainly they're carrying their load. The wildlife is bringing in nearly $500 million in local and state taxes. The numbers are huge, and yet I see the department continually trying to recruit more hunters. Nationally, since the 1980s, hunting rates amongst the population have been dropping. Wildlife watching has either been going up or holding steady, and it's pretty much shown that old folks like me go more into wildlife watching than into hunting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Ms. Hirsch, you're the wrap-up.
Good morning. I'm Melinda Hirsch, and I'm from Bellevue, Washington. I'd like to second what Bob had to say about the ammunition. I also would like to second what he said about the budgetary considerations, and I think that it's well worth considering that there are already several states that have taken into consideration the non-consumptive users of wildlife. For example, Florida and I believe Missouri and are making full use of that huge pot of money to support their fish and wildlife operations. The main thing I'd like to address right now, however, is more on the coyote killing contests. Quite honestly, I am appalled by these contests. They're cruel, they're inhumane, they inflict pain for fun. We are no longer in the era of lions and Christians. This is not the Colosseum. And so killing for fun in this time is quite honestly morally bankrupt. And we're doing that in the state of Washington. The other thing is I cannot honestly, in my wildest dreams, imagine why the state of Washington would want to promote more senseless violence in our society when we already have a gun-ridden violent society that senselessly kills children and innocents nearly every other week. It's on the news constantly. Why would we want to encourage that kind of thing? So I'm really hoping that you end these contests. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the open public input item, and thank you all very much. You made very clear, articulate statements. We appreciate that. I also appreciate keeping within the time limit. As you might have noticed, our staff, the deputy director, and staff in the audience have been taking notes. So although we don't respond immediately, we are paying attention to what you're saying. Thank you.